Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
We have Richard Schiff and the news all coming in this half.
The Adam Carolla Show presents Richard Schiff's birthday cocktail party for May 27th. Let's see who's invited. American cowboy Wild Bill Hickok is here. The 38th Vice President of the United States, Hubert Humphrey. American golfer Sam Snead. English actor from The Lord of the Rings, Christopher Lee. Former U.S. Secretary of State and winner of the Nobel Peace Prize in 1973, Henry Kissinger is here. We welcome Louis Gossett Jr., the bassist for Jefferson Starship, Pete Sears, keyboardist from the Black Crowes, Eddie Harsh. From Split Enz and Crowded House, Neil Finn is here. From Different Strokes, Todd Bridges. English actor Joseph Fiennes. And podcaster, comedian, author, filmmaker, actor, legendary radio broadcaster, and the greatest boss in the world, Adam Carolla. Richard Schiff is on the Adam Carolla Show.
That's right. We have the same birthday, Mr. Schiff.
I did not know that. I knew most of the other names, except for Wild Bill Hickok, and I'm really pleased that he has the same birthday as us.
And I'm sure if we could revive him and ask him, he'd say the same about you today. Or he'd go, who the fuck is that? I should shoot
more
him.
Likely.
What's a movie? Yeah,
what's a movie?
More likely.
Richard is here to talk about Kickstarter program, which launches on the 20th. It's for a graphic novel and scripted podcast called Grey. It's a supernatural revenge thriller reimagining the classic Oscar Wilde novel, The Picture of Dorian Gray. And Richard's going to be doing the voice. So let's talk about that before we talk about all your other successes. First off, I'm glad I've been doing podcasting for 12 and a half years. So I'm glad that this whole medium come around to the fact that we're doing scripted stuff and crime stuff and news stuff. It's so crazy. But how did you get involved with this?
It's a rejuvenation of the 30s and 40s where people used to listen to radio shows and radio dramas. I've listened to some of those old radio dramas, and they're incredible. They're amazing. You know, Orson Welles got started with that stuff, the Mercury Theater and all that. I got started with this because of Arvind Ethan David, who's the producer, who is someone I've worked with quite a few times and who I think is a genius of a producer. So he produced recently Jagged Little Pill on Broadway, which was a brilliant musical that's going to win a bunch of Tonys if that ever happens again. Mm-hmm. And he also produced Dirk Gently for BBC America, which I did with Neil Brown Jr., who's going to be my partner in this show. And he also produced a movie called The Infidel with the very famous British comedian David Baddiel, who wrote it, and another very famous British comedian named Omid Jalili, who co-starred in it with me. And it was a fantastic comedy about a Muslim man who finds out he's Jewish and has to deal with all of the political and social ramifications of that. And it was a worldwide hit, a comedy. And that's when I first met Arvind about 10 years ago. And we've had a great relationship, working relationship and friendship ever since. And anytime he calls, I will participate because his projects are always very, very astute and fun. And he knows how to do it right.
Well, I'm looking at your resume here. Of course, everyone knows The West Wing, but movies like Seven and Jurassic Park, Lost World, and Entourage, one of my favorite shows, Ballers. Have you worked steadily for 30 some odd years? I mean, what's the biggest gap you've had in work in 30 years?
The first 35 years of my life was a pretty big gap.
You put it all on one side of the ledger, got out of the way.
Well, I didn't get started acting until I was about 35. And before that, I was a director in theater in New York. And I kind of went to it backwards. And so I started as a no one knows who I am guy in theater in New York, did a few plays and a couple of movies and came out to L.A. And no one gave a shit about me. And so I had to do the, you know, the day player stuff and the get killed in the alleyway stuff. And that was, you know, the gaps were many and long in those days. And I slowly started to build a reputation of sorts and did plays and people would see me in plays. And then things started to grow. And in the 90s, and I was already 40, I think. I was in my late 30s or 40. And then that's when things started to pick up quite a bit. And I started to get a lot of good projects and films and things were moving forward.
I bet there's a lot more. I mean, everyone's heard of the boy bands or the one-hit wonders. I mean, there's acting versions of that. People get really hot when they're 19 or they get cast as the precocious neighbor son in some hit sitcom. But then, you know, they don't work past the age of 21, you know. Maybe there is something to delayed gratification. Well, I'm just kind of trying to do the math. Like maybe, A, you get a skill set. You actually develop a skill. You know, you can act, you can direct, you have a skill, but then also we don't all see you at 18 and then decide we don't want to see you anymore when you're 25, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a whole nother phenomenon, I think. And you're right. For me, it wasn't about ascertaining or reaching a nadir, a height in my career. Career wasn't in my equation because I didn't even think it was possible. I was really just following a curiosity about what this thing was about and how to do it and, you know, looking for ways in which I could work in it and not really caring until I had a kid whether I made a living at it or not. You know, I was driving a cab in New York and I was proofreading and doing, you know, and being a gigolo and doing whatever I could to make a living and while following this curiosity. And when I had a kid, things changed. And it was like, all right, whatever stupidity is in my head keeping me from getting a career going, I'll stop that now and put the pride aside and try to get some paying work.
I don't know but what I think. Yeah, I was just saying, I don't know what etiquette is when someone says being a gigolo, because part of me wants to go, okay, right. But the other part of me realizes I should take you seriously.
You never know.
Because that would be rude.
That would be very rude if you didn't take me seriously.
Gina?
I think therein lies the nature of the joke.
You know, it's funny when you said, you know, something you didn't, you alluded to not knowing that something could be a career. And of course, the thing that pops into my mind is, you know, half the people go, oh my God, it's Richard Schiff. And half the other people go, oh my God, it's Sheila Kelly's husband. So yeah. I was one of the many, many women who have enjoyed and partaken in S Factor and just loved it, got ripped for a while. And I don't know if you have any thoughts about that or how that came to be. I mean, a lot of people don't know what I mean when I say S Factor, but it was this really intense, emotionally and physically, pole exercising. Incredible.
Well, if they don't know, there's a documentary that's just out on Netflix called Strip Down, Rise Up, which features on Sheila's work. And deals with the intensity and the physicality and the sexuality and the eroticism of it.
It was so much fun.
And it's, you know, it's quite a remarkable journey that she's been through. Her and maybe a couple of other people almost invented this new way of discovery for women. And the journey's been just phenomenal. And it started when she was fascinated with the movement of pole dancing and did a movie called Dancing with the Blue Iguana. And out of that, she realized this is something special, this movement. If you take away the money and the sleaze and the beer and the, you know, and the, and all of that, and you just do the movement, it's very much like the original fertility dances, you know, in past cultures. And there was a creativity to it and a sensuality to it and a release of emotional energy to it and a healing.
I agree.
To it. And that she has evolved the way that she teaches this in order to kind of perfect, lack of a better word, a way to pass this on to women, and women all over the world have benefited from it. And so I come, people, women come up to the street to me and go, "Oh my God, you're Sheila Kelly's husband."
That's what I'm saying.
Tell her thank you so much for me, and they're either crying or they're laughing. They're so emotionally, invested.
Well, and it's also
it's amazing.
Yeah, because when it first came out, and I mean, there was just a mad rush. Classes were constantly full, and you'd get your class, and you'd go to Hollywood Boulevard because you had to get your 7-inch heels because that was part of it.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and I think they knew the guys at those shops knew the difference between the actual professionals and the people taking
the
class, because you go, "Hi, I'll take these in a 7.5." Okay, let me guess. S factor.
Gina, you asking if they took Diners Club was a tell, because the strippers pay with cash.
That's right. That's right.
That's what I know. Wow, that is impressive.
Yeah.
So
it is impressive.
And she has
it's amazing.
She has multiple studios. She's still doing it.
She did around the country, and the combination of the economic turndown, which made it a struggle to maintain a business all across the country. But then COVID kind of changed everything, because you can't do that work in an environment. So a lot of her classes, her work has gone online, and you should look at sfactor.com and look for that. And so the nature of the business is changing quite a bit. We'll see.
Did she have a background in dance, gymnastics, or
that kind
of stuff?
No. She was a ballerina when she was young, and an injury caused her to move to acting. So she became the brilliant actress and was the it girl for quite a while in the 90s, and then did some movies in L.A. Law. And now she plays my wife on The Good Doctor. And, Singles, she was in Singles, this iconic character. And Singles and a bunch of other things. But she was a dancer and always has been fascinated with this somatic element of psychological health, if that makes any sense. You know, that that the body is, you know, some people believe the core of who we are is in the brain, and others believe it might be actually in the body, and the body tells the brain what to do. And Sheila believes a lot in that. And it comes from being into ballet very young. You know, she's a good athlete at anything she does. And she, she's my wife. I adore her to death.
Wow.
I just think she's amazing.
That's a good. And by the way, in terms of things your wife could get into, you know, fentanyl's at the bottom. Pole dancing's got to be somewhere near the top. I mean.
Yeah, that's a point that people are not afraid to make. And, and call me very lucky a lot online and Twitter and so on. And they're right. I can't deny that. There's nothing unlucky about my wife being beautiful and into pole dancing, but in the purest, most erotic sense. So mm-hmm. It's fantastic.
Brian.
Speaking of your wife and you and unlucky, how are you guys feeling? I know you were diagnosed with COVID in November.
Yeah, I'm actually quite shocked at how lucid I think I'm being in this conversation, because
you're all over the road, dude.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's normal. That's
no, you're clear, very clear.
Okay, because I was just reading today how there's quite a bit of after effect. Studies are showing that psychological issues, dementia, and depression are increasing by 3 or 4 or 5-fold and COVID cases. And for me, I think I've been lucky. I was unlucky at the time because I was very sick and I went to the hospital for 6 days and actually had the phone call with Sheila because I didn't know if I would make it out. And and that was tough and it was debilitating, and I lost 20, 25 pounds and couldn't walk up a staircase for quite a while. That has all come back, but there's remnants and residuals that Sheila's feeling, that I'm feeling, and my son, who also had it,
oh wow,
is feeling. And it's a fatigue. It's a constant kind of being tired all the time. But the brain, it feels clogged and it feels a little fogged, and we forget words in the middle of sentences. And and our concentration is a little. Sheila's always a workaholic, 14, 15 hours a day. But even she is feeling tired. I sleep a lot before COVID and don't do anything a lot, you know, and just watch baseball and basketball, and that gets tiring. But when I write and when I do the other things that I do besides working on the set, I don't have the energy that I used to. But I think that we're very lucky overall. And from the stories that I've heard, the long versions of COVID that have been debilitating to people who can't even get to work because of it.
How did
I think we're relatively lucky.
How did it hit Sheila?
It was bad, but it wasn't as bad. She didn't have to go to the hospital. But she was as sick as she's ever been for about 3 weeks. And
does your son live with you guys?
Well, during this COVID thing, we're up in Vancouver shooting. And we all came up here. We got it in Vancouver. And we all came up here. And my daughter's here as well, who didn't get it because she hates us and lived downstairs.
Smart girl.
I'm kidding. But she actually lived in a room that was downstairs in a house that that we lived in at the time. And she just happened to not get it. And that was great. But my son, they're all living with us. That's all going to change in a couple of weeks. But yeah, they lived us for the entire season of this shoot of the doctor.
Oh, yeah. So obviously that shot out of Vancouver.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, it seems like everything's shot out of somewhere these days.
It's a good assumption that if you can't identify the location, it's Vancouver.
Yeah. And probably nicer to hang out in Vancouver than New Mexico or some other place
where they shot
everything.
A few things in New Mexico, and Santa Fe is great, and Albuquerque is Albuquerque.
But is it coming up? I mean, I imagine after Breaking Bad and some other productions.
Well, no, it's coming up because of the tax breaks. So any state that offers tax breaks is going to get volume. You know, and so Georgia did for a while. That might change now, but Georgia did, and Atlanta and North Carolina did, and Wilmington and Texas for a while, and Michigan tried it for a minute and a half, and California is slow to match it. So many shows. Like I was told, our show was going to shoot in L.A., and then I have to move up to Vancouver, and it's like, what the hell's going on? I have a life in Los Angeles. I was told the show was going to be in Los Angeles, and then it's cheaper. You know, there's 70 cents on the dollar. The unions aren't as effective in Canada. And so everything is cheaper for them to shoot it up here. And so they do. And the quality of life is irrelevant to the factory.
I wonder, it's interesting. It's a sociological thing. I've told my listeners I drove Bryan Cranston to the airport from my studio when he was starting Breaking Bad. He was just a guest on the show, and he had to leave to go catch a flight to go to New Mexico, and I just told him I was leaving. So don't call an Uber. I'm leaving. I'll give you a ride. But it's an interesting experiment, which is I've lived in Los Angeles my entire life. No one ever talked about New Mexico or thought about going to New Mexico. No. There's nothing in New Mexico. But then we got a little grabby here in Los Angeles, and the unions and the taxes and stuff, and productions wanted to turn a profit. So they ended up going to nearby places, sometimes faraway places, but they go to New Mexico. And now there's a thriving something going on over there that I don't know if they ever would have had that if we didn't sort of force that migration, and maybe it'll be a good thing, like big picture.
Well, and didn't you say, or somebody said, that Breaking Bad, which is one of all of our favorite shows, was supposed to take place in Riverside?
Yeah, it was supposed to be out here.
Oh yeah, really?
It kind of makes sense when you think about cooking up meth, right?
Yeah, or Palmdale.
Yeah,
yeah,
yep, yep.
I didn't know that. That's fascinating. Yeah, and then New Orleans is another. Louisiana is another one. Mm-hmm. That does the tax breaks, and you'll find shows placed in New Orleans for arbitrary reasons that don't necessarily attach itself to the story, and they adjust so that they can get the tax breaks. So I don't think it's good for people who had a life in Los Angeles and you know, families get split up I don't like it for that reason, but it is good for certain depressed areas that might be revived a little bit because the film community comes to it. Vancouver's rich enough.
Oh, yeah.
They don't need us anymore.
No, they don't.
No.
It's the most expensive city in the world, from what I understand, and it's beautiful. But, you know, I'm not Canadian. Get me the frick out of here. I want to go home.
No, I'm with you. I wonder, I know Los Angeles, California, and Los Angeles, you know, they had some runaway production stuff and they tried to entice people to come back and do more productions here. But evidently they haven't done enough, or they've done some and it's worked a bit. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not. I think I don't know the numbers. I think the tax, it's hefty. It's like, I shouldn't even guess at the numbers, but they raised the number of dollars that goes to tax incentives to keep shows here. But there's all sorts of rules. There's no guarantee, for instance, that if we got the tax break and stayed in LA, that we would get it next year. Mm-hmm. So then what do? You got to move everything to another location. So it's easier financially for people to make the choice to go get the tax break where they know they can get it every year, especially if they're long running. For films, it might be a little different. They can negotiate from a stronger position.
Did you have to quarantine when you came into Canada?
I had a quarantine. So
a lot of good that did.
This is my life in Canada. We all came up here and had to quarantine for 14 days. I had to go back to L.A. to shoot the West Wing special that was on HBO Max that we did in October. And so I had to come back to Canada and quarantine another 14 days. And the Good Doctor production was very kind to accommodate my schedule for that. And then I got sick. And after I got out of the dang hospital, I had to quarantine for another 21 days.
Oh, wow.
So I've 49 days I've spent under house arrest in Canada. Wow.
It's like Castaway.
Because of this COVID.
Yeah. You definitely have the record, the quarantine record, at least the modern day quarantine record. I'm sure if we went back 100 years.
I turned down a movie in New Mexico because I'd have to come back and quarantine for another 14 days. And the production was willing to do it. But I was like, I cannot quarantine again. So no. I wish I could have done that, but no.
Are you I'm sensing you're kind of like me, which is you have your house, you have your shit in your house, you have the stuff you like to do, you have your TiVo loaded up, you know
you
where your stuff is, and you like it that way. Some people just love to be somewhere else. I don't trust those people, but I'm secretly envious of them. But I like my stuff, but on the other hand, I like cars and tools and stuff like that. And so I feel like I'm away from my stuff when I go somewhere. But you don't strike me as a cars and tools guy, although I know you were a Teamster. I think you were an electrician. I was reading.
I was a Teamster, but the job was cleaning Greyhound buses with diesel fuel from 11 at night till 7 in the morning on 11th Avenue and 40 whatever street it was. That was my Teamster card job.
Wow.
Yeah.
But did you work as electrician as well? Or what?
I did at the IBEW, yeah. I was I worked for cable. In the early days of Manhattan Cable, they were laying cable all across southern Manhattan. No one says that. Downtown Manhattan, in the projects downtown, Lower East. And so I would install cable into buildings, and then I became a driver of the van, the tool van, and I'd drive back and forth to the main headquarters and stuff because I was considered the best driver. Like no one had ever seen driving a van like I drive a van because I had driven a cab, so I knew the streets of New York are mine as far as it goes when I'm behind a wheel. So I could get from point A to point B twice as fast as anybody else. So that they used me just to drive back and forth. That was my IBEW. But I did a lot of, in apartments and in buildings on rooftops and stuff. The original cable stuff from Manhattan Cable TV way back in the day. Right when, the Knicks and the Rangers were the only thing on TV. Mm. The only thing on the cable was the Knicks, the Rangers, and the Stock Exchange.
Yeah. And God, what was that chick's name? Bird?
Robin Bird.
Channel J.
Robin Bird.
Robin Bird and Al Goldstein.
Yeah.
And Screw Magazine and Channel J. Yeah, that came a little later.
So,
but yeah, all that stuff.
Do you miss your van and your cable back in L.A.? Or I'm just trying to figure it out because you see most.
No, that was New York. That
yeah.
was New York.
No, but days. what I'm
in
saying
in L.A. Yeah, the stuff.
Yeah, the stuff. Do you, most guys I know who are sort of artistic, and I think of you as an artistic guy. They travel. They go. Oh, I just need a book, and I'm like, I'm happy to be on the road or whatever. And the guys I know who have the cars and the tools, like, you know, Leno's miserable when he's away from his stuff. So, yeah. But do you have stuff?
You know, George Carlin did a whole routine about stuff.
That's right.
You know, when you start out, you try to, you get a little place and you get your stuff, and then you need more stuff. So you get a bigger place and you get a bigger place and you need more stuff to fill in. He did a whole thing on stuff.
Remember it.
I have a lot of stuff. It doesn't do any good except it surrounds me,
mm-hmm.
and it's not organized. It's an utter mess, but it's there. It's mine, and I like to look at it. And I like to know that it's there behind me, as I do whatever I do in my office back home. And I also have a little gym in the back, and I have whatever sports I want, all taped. You know, and up here, I can't even get a Knick game or a Yankee game. And it's like, I'm in a foreign country. And,
yeah.
and they don't treat me well because they don't give me my sports. But yeah, no, I like to, I feel comfortable. But we just sold our LA house, and where our lives are in an upheaval. And we don't even know where we're going to live, except probably back here in this house for next season. And then I don't know what's happening. And my son's going to get his own place in L.A. And my daughter's going to college, back to college, and not doing homeschooling. And I might want to go back to New York. And we're, you know, Sheila and I are just going, what the hell are we doing? And we don't know.
Wow.
The stuff is in a store. You know, a lot of the stuff is in storage.
I had heard that there were some deals to be had in the city. I was talking to a comedian, mm-hmm. said yeah. he got a really nice apartment, way more than he ever could have afforded, and maybe they gave him the first 4 months
yes.
free
There's
or
like
something.
A penthouse in the city because everybody's fleeing.
Oh, you could rent there for nothing, and you can make your own deal, and you could get a big apartment. The problem is no one else is in your building.
That's even better.
Yeah, they're
sounds
all,
great.
They're all in the. I love that's New York. What I loved. So I was the only one that stayed in the city in the summers on the weekend. Everyone left. It was me and the tourists, and I'd go play softball in Central Park, and no one, you know, and it was great. It was I had the city to myself. It felt like so I liked that, but. Yeah, you can rent. The prices, if you wanted to buy, I think are leveling off now. But there were deals to be had, and you know, New York's going to come back. You got to assume it's going to come back. And I wouldn't do it for an investment. I would do it to just move and go back to my home. I do have to.
Yeah.
Before we done though, I do want to mention a couple of more things about Gray because they deserve it. Can I do that now?
Sure. Yeah. I should tell everyone the Kickstarter launches April 20th.
Kickstarter launch is April 20th, and it's to find it, it's sistersofgray.com, www.sistersofgray.com. And it's Lauren Patton is also in it. Samuel Barnett, who I worked with, and Dirk Gently is also in it. Lauren Patton was the lead in Jagged Little Pill on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been in my reading group on Sundays, which we now do on Zoom. And we read people's plays and screenplays and novels and stuff. And she's phenomenal. She is my favorite. I don't know what the pronoun is. So I apologize if I got it wrong, but it's Lauren Patton is the best actor, young actor that I know. And
wow.
That's how phenomenal that actor is, and it's a perfect casting to play Dorian Gray, and Neil Brown and I are like brothers. I adore him, and so it's going to be a blast. It's a radio play, I guess, a drama, and it's also a graphic novel which people can purchase. And the graphic novel is really, really interesting and fascinating. It's a very radical take on the portrait of Dorian Gray, the Oscar Wilde book.
Okay,
I'm done. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll throw it out. Sistersofgray.com. Richard Schiff, thanks for joining us. Sorry you missed your stuff.
Well, there's always more stuff to get there. And you can always, you know, you can always show me your stuff when I'm in LA, so I have stuff to look at.
Well, I got a bunch of Paul Newman race cars, so if you're a fan of Paul Newman, you can come by and see some of his race cars.
I am a fan. You actually have his cars?
13 of his race cars.
Oh, come on. Oh, I remember, I think, being in your studio and seeing a couple of cars.
Yeah, there's a couple here, but there's more near here.
Well, that's fascinating. Of all the things about Paul Newman, that's the least interesting to me. But I'm fascinated that
I didn't think of you as a stuff guy. That's what, you know.
I'm just not a car guy or a race car guy. I like cars when I'm in them and when I got to get somewhere. But what they look like, I could care less.
But someone who could carve up the streets of Manhattan in a utility van like you, I think you'd have a little more reverence for the race car.
I just don't. As long as the engine works, I'm good. And the wheels turn.
Well, thanks, Richard. And I'm glad you've all recovered. And sorry you're stuck in Canada. But if you're going to be in Canada, you know, Vancouver is the place to be.
I concur.
People
are extraordinarily and oddly friendly.
Yeah, I agree.
And, I'm getting used to it, and it's going to be weird when I come back to the States and people don't say hello for no reason.
To us, they're suspiciously friendly.
Right.
Well, I thought suspiciously for a while, but now I'm just taking it for what it is, and it's nice. There's not a lot of human contact other than your family here, so I appreciate it. But they're genuinely nice. I'm not suspicious. It's weird, but it's not. I'm not suspicious of
it. Thanks for joining us, Richard. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. Take care. Now.
All right. All right. Take a quick break. Come back and do the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gino Grad. Stuff they saw on TMZ. Joe Biden. Kamala. Big news with Gino Grad.
News with Gina Grad.
Couple of deaths over the weekend that we should mention. Earl Simmons, I don't know if you're familiar with that name, better known as DMX, has died.
Yeah.
He was hospitalized on April 2nd after suffering an apparent drug overdose and subsequent heart attack at his home in White Plains, New York. That's according to Pitchfork and other outlets. His first five albums all hit number one, and his debut album, And Then There Was X, went five times platinum. His albums were certified platinum a total of 14 times. He was honored with a trio of Grammy nominations, but it wasn't always good for DMX. A couple of run-ins with the law for drugs, weapons, possessions, animal cruelty, child support, and various driving infractions. In March 2018, he was sentenced to a year behind bars for tax evasion. He leaves behind 15 kids from various women.
Well, wait a minute. Max Batty, you got to find. So I woke up today and someone tweeted me one of those things where they go, I am DMX. They have like the kid and then the next kid goes, I am DMX. And I'm like, really? You're nine. He has 15 kids and was busted on animal cruelty. Mm. I don't know. Let me pick someone else to aspire to. I mean, we don't.
His dad's a hero.
I'm sad that he's gone, but in terms of your average 9-year-old, go ahead and pick, I don't know, Martin Luther King or something. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I just woke up. It was on Twitter, and it was I am.
That sounds very Nike.
It's that stupid thing now where everyone does that. You get the sort of rainbow coalition of 9-year-olds, and they'll say, maybe LeBron tweeted it out or something. It wasn't on my feed. It was just there. I just remember seeing it.
Well, while we look for that, did you see anything on Twitter with a bunch of kids saying, I am Prince Philip?
No, less of them.
Okay.
Did he did DMX die of a drug overdose?
Of cardiac arrest. The prevailing report right now is that it was from a drug overdose.
Mm.
And that may be clarified further, but they're saying it was cardiac arrest. and the reports were brought on by drug overdose.
Maybe they weren't saying I am DMX, but they're saying I am D or something, or X or something. It was out in the Twitter sphere this morning. I saw it, so I don't know.
Okay.
Something to do with LeBron. That's another reaction I had.
All right. Well, while we look for that, the Duke of Edinburgh, Prince Philip, he has also died. He was 99 years old, husband and royal consort of Queen Elizabeth II. He's survived by his wife, Queen Elizabeth, their children, Prince Charles, Princess Anne, Prince Edward, and Andrew. On Philip's 90th birthday in 2011, Elizabeth made him a Lord High Admiral of the Royal Navy. In May 2017, he became the longest serving royal consort in British history. Britain's military forces offered a 40-minute gun salute throughout the kingdom.
What?
Yes, a slow barrage.
Fucking birds are all in therapy right now. They're all fucking, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, one detonation per minute starting at noon. For 40 minutes.
All right. Well, one a minute.
Yeah, but then it's like, how many minutes does it take for you to realize it's every minute? You're like, okay, that's over. And so, then another one.
So does what's his name have to fly back, the grandson,
he
and
is.
Attend the
Harry,
whatever?
Harry's flying back for the funeral. Meghan Markle got a doctor's note. She said the doctor said no.
Oh, boy. See, that's weird. Well, it's always weird. Everything's weird.
What are you referring to?
I just mean it's like, I don't know, it's like the whole Oprah interview and all the stuff and everything.
An icy reception.
Yeah, I mean.
Long time no see.
Well, you know, those Brits really are known to hash it out.
I guess I'm saying is, you know, like sometimes there'll be something on the schedule that you know involves another person. Let's just say Thanksgiving or something. And then, like, 9 days before Thanksgiving, that cousin will send you a really shitty email.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and I don't like you or your fat wife, you know, whatever. And it's like, you're coming over to the house in 8.5 days. Like,
time it.
Just fucking figure this out. Mm-hmm. You have to make it all weird now when you come over. And we have to, do we address it?
Right.
Do we not? Like, some people will do that. And you'll go, I'm going to see you tomorrow at work. I'm going to see you. Like, why is this timing thing?
I'm with you. Although, I mean, I was going to say, who could have guessed this? But he was 99, so they probably could have guessed it.
Yeah, and he was in the hospital, or as Pierce Morgan says, in hospital.
Yeah, at university, in hospital.
Which I think we waste a lot of time with our ands and our thes and
think
all
how
that.
Much time can be saved.
Yeah, in hospital. That's right. He might still. What was that thing I saw? It's driving me nuts.
I'm still.
Was all over. Well, I don't know if it was all over the place, but I saw it this morning, so I don't know why. It's
did somebody
not
tweet
still
it
around.
To you? That's an easier way to find it.
I don't know.
No, never mind.
I just
I'm not.
Turn on my phone.
It's on my Twitter.
It's on my Twitter.
Shut up.
It's on the Twitter. I don't know if it's the Twitter, my Twitter.
Maybe it's on Twitter.
It's on Twitter.
Just like Piers Morgan would do.
It's on Twitter.
Maybe it was on an episode of The Family Guy.
Yes. That's
okay.
Right.
So Dan Crenshaw, some really sad news for Congressman Dan Crenshaw. He's gone dark on all social media because of what he calls a terrifying medical issue in his eye that will leave him temporarily blind following the surgery. So as a reminder for people who don't remember, the GOP rep from Texas is a former Navy SEAL who lost an eye in an IED blast in Afghanistan. But the injuries also caused serious damage to his other eye. So he always said, I don't have one good eye. I have half of one good eye. And now he was told that retina is detaching. So Dan underwent emergency surgery on Friday and says the doctor put a gas bubble in his eye to act as a bandage for the retina, which means he has to rest face down for a week, unable to see anything. He says that he'll be effectively blind for a month, so he won't be doing any interviews or social media except for updates on his health. But otherwise, he could go blind.
I think he had that initially because I read his book, or I listened to the audio book at least, and I've interviewed him a few times. Nice guy. Went out for a beer.
Yeah, you had him on
afterward.
Stage.
Yeah, but you know, we do that, you know, politician, like, I got to be a good guy to have a beer with, and I always tell people they shouldn't base their vote on it. Maybe they should with Dan. He's a good guy to have a beer with. Any Navy SEAL guys are fun guys to have a beer with, but I think in his memoir, as I recall, he had to do that same thing already in hospital. Something with the eye, you have to lie on your stomach for extended period of time. And he couldn't see out of his quote-unquote good eye or working eye for a long period of time after the initial blast, which took out his interpreter completely. So his interpreter, I think the story is his interpreter was in front of him. He's the guy who stepped on it, so he was completely demolished. And then Dan's face was taken out.
And you know what was
and his chest and everything.
We haven't, I mean, this hasn't been in the news for a while, but it's how most of us know who he is because of the SNL sort of dust-up.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because, remember, when he, you know, he addressed it, and I watched the video recently just because I saw this article. And in the video, he says, like, I'm not into demanding people apologize. I'm not into apologies, and I'm not asking for one. I'm just putting out there that maybe veterans in general, their mutilated body parts, maybe they don't appreciate that being a punchline. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
and I thought that was a really kind of interesting way to couch it.
He's a thoughtful guy, smart guy, and we could definitely do with more politicians of his ilk on both sides of the aisle. Where the hell is that thing, man?
I'm still looking. I have no idea.
Oh, man, what the hell was I looking at? I don't know what they were. I don't think they were calling him DMX. What's his name?
Earl Simmons.
Nah, wasn't my name is Earl. I would have remembered that. Maybe they're calling him X or
DMX. You want my X? Darkman X.
Really?
Really.
I'm pretty sure it's what the DM stood for.
Okay.
Oh, really? Oh,
well, we can look that up. I don't want to speak out of turn.
Please.
I've heard that more than once.
You want to talk a little Tin Horn Flats?
Oh, yeah.
I got it right here, and then you jump in with anything else you have. So the LA Times reports that the city of Burbank put up a chain link fence around Tin Horn Flats on Saturday for defying the county health orders during the pandemic. The fence was erected around the Saloon and Grill to prevent the owners from reopening their unsafe conditions. Mm. The city, which received permission from a judge to shut off power to the business last month, secured a preliminary injunction Friday to prevent the restaurant from operating without a county health permit and a city conditional use permit, according to Burbank police. Mark Garagos, very involved, very all over the article, said he would move to have the preliminary injunction dissolved. The city maintains the restaurant is an ongoing public nuisance.
Well, they made it into an ongoing public nuisance.
Sandbags and chain link fences.
They would have been quietly serving burgers.
If they'd just done what their masters had ordered several months ago, then we would not have this issue. But they defied the city. Well, a couple things about this. First off, Max Patty, you got that SWAT team picture somewhere? So Mark sent a picture of SWAT team guys riding on the outside of a semi-armored unit, which I have done when I did a ride-along with the Hawthorne SWAT team. You stand on the running boards.
Wow.
That's how they do it, and they go down the street. Now,
talk about no time for backup.
Now, Mark,
no time for backseat.
Mark tweets out this picture and it says, "Here you go, Burbank," replying to Tin Horn Flats and to shut them down. Anyway, he tweets it out. I see it and I start laughing because I think this is a picture. I think Mark is using hyperbole and making a joke.
Right. Yeah. Try this next time.
I don't retweet it. Nobody does. Some people tell him, "Oh, come on, that's in Portland or whatever." By the way, bad news, Portland. We didn't say Fallujah.
Yeah.
We said Portland.
We didn't even say Florida.
Just let me tell you, Portland, what a fucking shit show your city's turned into. We go, oh, that's from Portland. Come on.
Let's look in the mirror, Doug.
Yeah. So then Mark comes in here on Friday. And he's like, oh, no, that's – I had one of my people take that picture. That's in front of Tin Horn Flats. And I'm like, oh, Mark, that's a joke, right? He's like, no. They rolled up – the fucking SWAT team rolled up in full gear, full riot gear. And then people were accusing him of cooking it. And then he showed me a picture of the car with the Burbank PD car like parked next to it and Tin Horn Flats or whatever. Dawson's gesticulating over there, but either way, they, you know, the timeline is they closed everything down for months and months and months, and then they said you can come back and do outdoor dining, and then everyone made all the accommodations for the outdoor dining. And then Tin Horn Flats did that as well. I think they're the oldest. I was reading an article about it today. I think they're the oldest bar in Burbank. So then they come back. Then they do this inane no more outdoor dining, which somebody should have really thought about that because it was never based in anything. It was just a knee jerk. We're going to do more, so we'll do this. And you took all these businesses that were hanging on by thread, and then you shut down the outdoor dining, especially when all of them made accommodations with their lucites and their distancing.
Doubled down
table.
With money they didn't have.
Right. And, you know, they put up tents and heaters and they expended a lot of energy and a lot of money. And then they closed that down, and then Tin Horn Flats said, no, we're going to stay open. And Sonny and I went out and ate on the patios, a show of solidarity. Barrett LePagian was my grade from North Hollywood High. That's the dad. So Barrett's
Lucas is the son.
Dad. Lucas is the son. Lucas has been arrested 3 times now.
And doesn't
times, fool?
Doesn't Barrett live in like Thailand or something? He's not even here.
Oh, I don't know.
We should arrest him. That's what you're saying.
Right. I thought I read that.
I talked to him once. Anyway, so they shut it down and they shut the electricity. And then they brought in generators, the Tin Horn Flats guys. So the city of Burbank then boarded up the doors. And then the Tin Horn Flats guy took off the doors. And then they boarded up the doors and then they sandbagged the doors to try to stop them. And then Barrett removed a sandbag and then they arrested him, I think, for a third time. And now they've just put up fencing around the building not to let them in. And here's the whole thing about the Burbank and the Burbank City Council. You guys are sending a message. The message we're receiving is you're fucking cocksuckers who need to fucking do something with your shitty lives. That is the message we're yes, you're sending a message. It's definitely a message. The message is don't fuck with Burbank. Well, fuck you. This is a horrible fucking plan. And you know, I had this thought when I was walking down the beach trying to relax today. I thought to myself, what if the owner of Tin Horn Flats was a black woman?
Oh.
I bet those pussies would tap out in a second.
Oh, well,
they would
hate
the fucking optics of this.
Of course.
And this would be a national story if, in fact, that was the case.
Yes.
Where is the fucking news? Like, where is CNN? Because when a cake baker in Oregon says he's not going to bake a fucking cake for a gay wedding, you're all fucking up on that story. What about this story? Crazy government overreach. I mean, they're literally putting up fencing around Tin Horn Flats. This should be a rallying call. People should wake up to this and understand this is what you're getting with this government, especially Burbank. Burbank has always been overficious. Like they gave out, they always had, I've called them rape bank my entire broadcasting career because of all the fucking chicken shit tickets they hand out in Burbank. That's their mentality. They rule the roost. Taxpayers owe them and they'll do whatever the fuck they want. Sorry.
Well, but
what are you guys looking for over there? Is somebody, are you guys looking for something?
Yeah, I was looking for the DMX thing.
Oh, that's it? Okay.
I found it.
Dawson's moving around over there like he's looking for something. Nah?
No, the other thing earlier I was mentioning that the picture that we put up with the SWAT team, the original picture that was tweeted, if you pulled out on the picture and loaded it from the original thing, you can clearly see the Burbank PD logo on the side of the car. That's what I was running around for.
You fucking cowardly pussies should start understanding that the people don't work for you. They're not your fucking subjects. By the way, you made a mistake. I know you can say, I mean, there's the kind of slippery slope people who go, well, no, what if people drive 200 miles an hour in a school zone? Well, we can't arrest them. It's like, yeah, you can arrest them. You can also admit you made a mistake. Mm-hmm. This is a business. And cooler heads can prevail.
Yeah.
We'll probably never know the answer, but I wonder how much cover Tinhorn Flats is providing for other businesses in Burbank who are doing the same thing quietly.
But they're the lightning rod.
Yeah, but they're attracting a lot of attention, a lot of resources, frankly.
Well, then again, if they're the example, I would be too afraid if I was just some little business owner. Like, look what they're doing to Tinhorn Flats. I can't afford that to be me.
This is a small business and a small family-run business in a time where small family-run businesses are fucking eating shit and you guys are doubling down. Right. Ugh. Also, just fucking let them open and have – I went there. You fucking have a burger and some fries and a beer. You sit in the back. People enjoy themselves. Ugh. Oh, you have – oh, the DMX thing is a Colin Kaepernick thing. That's okay. Right. All right. I screwed up. I knew it was a black sports icon, but sports all right. Icons. Here it is.
That's okay.
Well, I am DMX. I am DMX.
It's a 7-year-old kids of color.
Wasn't this the actual video, though? You guys don't know.
This is the video.
Yeah, this is...
He didn't whip this together.
No.
This is from...
Cut. Yeah, I think he just cut it from... it's a song called Who We Be.
Who We Be from the...
Brian, you know a lot more about DMX than I do.
This is a crossover hit. K-Rock played this a lot back in like 04.
Are those his actual kids?
I mean, technically,
I only saw seven
DMX.
Of them.
Unclear.
Oh, so that's just a clip from the video.
Yeah.
Oh, well, then, sorry. I thought someone put it together. It looked like it was a Nike commercial. Yeah.
That's good work. It's a good song.
All right. Well, some interesting auction items that we should look out for if you're even remotely a fan of American history. A large personal library, which includes a first printing of the Declaration of Independence, an early version of the Emancipation Proclamation, and a wanted poster for Abraham Lincoln's killers, is expected to fetch a lot of money. In fact, for all this stuff, they're saying north of $10 million. The collection is from the estate of Ira Lippman, the founder of the privately held security film Guardsmark, and his wife Barbara. They both since passed away, dubbed by Sotheby's the Passion of American Collectors. So it's made of 560 lots, books, pamphlets, maps, atlases, and they break down what they think each item is going to go for. But I mean, again, the wanted poster for Booth and John Surratt is expected to go for over $60,000. But this is interesting. You know, the Emancipation Proclamation, they're thinking $80,000. The first printing of the Declaration of Independence, $350,000. But the most expensive piece up for auction is a 7th edition copy of the Bay Psalm book from 1697. It's the first book printed in the British Americas and the first book to be written here.
Really?
The book was owned and signed by Jonathan Corwin. He was a judge in the Salem witch trials. So for all this stuff that we know in our textbooks, that's going for like $80,000. This is estimated to go for $500,000, the book alone.
Now, this probably isn't the same guys that are getting like Darth Vader's helmet. Mm. This is a different crew.
I mean, maybe.
Scholarly.
Yeah. Mm. More bookish.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting. I wonder, I'm thinking about Zucker or Abrams, who has all the Davy Crockett?
Davy Crockett, yeah.
Abrams.
Abrams has all the Davy Crockett
stuff?
Jim Abrams.
Yeah. That kind of stuff is probably a decent investment, 30 years ago if you're getting a bunch of Davy Crockett stuff. And everyone's like, who cares?
And that's something you love from childhood, but everybody still is interested in it.
Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier. All right, what else we got, Gina Grand?
Oh, the woman with the Guinness World Records longest fingernails has cut them off after growing them for 28 years. It's kind of cool and kind of squeamish.
It's a little horrifying.
Yeah. I didn't do the up close of her painting her nails, but Ayanna Williams broke the record 3 years ago, and we do have some video in a second. Each of her nails measured nearly 2 feet long. She continued growing them until last weekend. Altogether, the 10-foot fingernails were 24 feet if you stretch them out end to end.
Definitely not a Jew.
That's right. A Fort Worth, Texas dermatologist needed a power rotary tool to cut through the nails. And just so you can see.
Okay.
You want to see it?
But what do you do?
Well,
I mean, okay.
Has she wiped her ass in 24 years?
Well, that's the thing. There were some images that just kind of gave me like the heebie-jeebs, and this isn't one of them. This is her talking about the clip from Guinness World Records.
How are you feeling?
I mean, tomorrow's the big day, girl.
Girl, I don't know, a little mixed emotions about my baby's going. Probably been having them about 28, 29 years, totally growing them. Yeah.
Oh my God,
the other one.
Tomorrow's going to be probably emotional.
That's her friend.
Yeah, her friend's nails were what? A foot curled around?
Who do you think convinced her to do it? Yes, cut them.
Salieri.
Yes, I'm going to take the crown. Whoa. Boy,
Salieri.
I could not. Couldn't your life? Isn't your life wasted for 28 years?
Not if that's your identity and you're proud of it and you won the, you know, world record.
Do you guys have this thing with your nails, which is the second my fingernails get long at all, it bothers the shit out of me. I notice stuff getting under it. I clip them short all the time. Maybe it's because I used to work with my hands, construction and cars and stuff. They immediately get destroyed. They look black at the ends.
It for sure bothers the shit out of me. Then I let them go for another 2 weeks.
Who can – see, that's what I don't understand. I'm a biter. I always have been. Every once in a while I'll put acrylics on, but I bite them. I've never had natural long nails in my life.
I quit biting my nails cold turkey one day.
Wow.
In college, a girl I liked saw me biting my nails. She goes, "Do you bite your nails?" I'm like, "Yeah." I was 17 years old. It's freshman year. And she goes, "That's really unattractive."
Oh, no.
Wow.
That was the last moment I bit my nails.
And her name was Christy Bishop.
Indeed, my one.
You know what, though? No one would ever do that for me because I caught myself doing it. I didn't realize it. I do it in the shower when I'm just like thinking and like letting the letting the hair conditioner kind of do its thing. I'll just kind of sit there and just like think and bite my nails and then they're gone.
I wish I bit my nails. It drives me nuts. Although I do. All right. So here's my nail thing. It drives me nuts when they get anything close to long. I cut them all the time. There's two things. I've decided that cutting my nails whilst sitting around is a waste of time for some reason. I've also have trouble.
Another way to do it?
Do you get on the elliptical?
Yes. I also have decided that I cannot keep track of them because you clip it and the nail goes shooting across the room. I only do it on walks.
Okay.
I take the nail clippers and I go, you know what? Back to the earth from whence you came.
Good. Dust to dust.
Are you suspicious? You know, because on Sopranos, the woman who lives in Italy makes the housekeeper collect her nails and burn them so nobody puts the hex on her.
I just walk. It's a weird little habit. I have many different nail clippers. I'll throw them in the car, throw them whatever, and I'll always go like out on a walk because I hate finding them on the carpet or whatever that is. I miss, kind of interesting, we always talk about those commercials. Find the Lee press-on nail commercial. That was one of my favorites as a youth because it was kind of the woman's turn because in the past she was worried about ring around the collar and why her husband didn't want a second cup of her friend's coffee and wanted her coffee. Did wanted a second of her friend's and blah, blah, blah. But the Lee press-on nail, well, I guess it's bad too. She breaks a nail. It's like, oh, why tonight? We're going out. And then the guy's like, the most unrealistic depiction of in all of TV was the husband wife in the 70s getting ready together, like they'd be in the bathroom, and
side by side.
My entire adult life is hearing a hairdryer and screaming, "What the fuck are you doing in there? We're supposed to be at the restaurant in 15 minutes." Not like me cinching up my tie and like doing my vest.
Or she comes around you and straightens your tie.
Yeah, she's primping.
Or gives you the shake the head, not that time.
Right. Why tonight? Do you have that one?
I don't think we had that exact one. We're looking for that one.
It's the classic Lee press-on nails.
It's like it's not commercial.
It's probably the only one. But she's devastated because she breaks a nail the night they're going out. Yeah. She cannot be seen. And then she discovers... They don't show the part where she goes and buys the Lee press-on nails. It's moments later, so she owns them already.
Yeah, you gotta have an emergency
so
pack.
So why so crestfallen? You know what I mean? You have it.
Yeah. You got no problems.
I always kind of feel... I always feel that way in car commercials where they have insurance and then like the boulder lands on the car and they're like, no! It's like, oh, you're fully insured.
You'll get it back.
You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Cement truck dumps the whole contents of the...
Right
thing into the convertible.
Oh my God!
Right. Oh yeah. This is the one. This is all just these. I would see these women, and I would see my mom flopped out on her bed yelling freak out with her gray hair while gaining weight. And I'd be like, who are these people? What are these houses? Look at those curtains. They're curtains. They match.
There's fresh flowers.
There's flowers. Sorry, go ahead.
Be ready in half an hour?
Almost ready. Tonight I'm not rushing. Oh, no.
What's wrong?
I broke
What's
a
wrong?
Nail. Why tonight?
Lee Nails, a nail mender and lengthener that really works. Brush on Lee Nails. Bend a chipped or torn nail or lengthen all time.
Oh, your
create
repair.
Longer, stronger, yeah, natural-looking right. nails.
Right.
Too bad about your nail.
Not too bad.
You grew a new one.
Almost.
Lee Nails.
Who is this couple? And that guy's got a porn stash that rivals anybody in the industry.
He looks like a porn star or some football player that guests on, like, Mr. Belvedere.
He looked a little... All right, I'm going football player. Max Pata, I'm going to buy you a second.
Okay.
Find me Todd Christensen with a mustache and a lightish perm.
Oh.
Raiders, Todd Christensen... Was a fullback, converted.
Two?
Tight end.
Oh, sorry, I missed that part.
All pro.
Whoa.
That's why I had the
46.
That's why I had the 46.
Ah.
Yeah, I think Todd Christensen could have given the Lee press on.
Guy.
He had.
What's up with this guy?
He had a perm and a stash.
Holy moly.
He was fucking all pro. I mean, he was a great. He was a great tight end on the Raiders.
That's
you remember him?
No, it was a little before my time. Was it
a little bit before? He was I think he had a couple all pro years in there. He was a real standout tight end, but man, that guy's got a perm and a porn mustache.
To beat the band.
2-time Super Bowl champ, 5-time Pro Bowl.
Five.
You wear whatever you want.
All pro.
Don't fucking sleep on Todd Christensen, Brian. That guy was good.
Let's go.
And he kind of looks like the Lee Presson guy.
He sure
I'm
does.
Sure he gets it all the time.
Good pull. Right?
All right. Mash that up. Come on. I'll tell you about... let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news. I am Prince Philip.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Well, Jake Paul's going to join us tomorrow. Appleton, Wisconsin, Skyline Comedy Club, May 7th and 8th. We'll do stand-up. I'll do stand-up there, and then we'll do a live podcast there in Golden, Colorado as well. Buffalo Rose, June 18th, 19th. And Royal Oak in Michigan. Beautiful theater there, September 10th. Go to amkroll.com. Oh, Kansas City as well, Arvest Bank Theater. That'll be September 11th. Go to amkroll.com for all the live shows. And check out Richard Schiff's website. I should say the Kickstarter launches April 20th, sistersofgray.com. Max Zapata, we'll mash that up tomorrow maybe with, getting there. I'll have to pick another porn star. Todd Christensen, man, what a man. That dude was all man. All right, until next time, it's Adam Crawford, Gina Grad in the house, and Paul Bryan in the house, and Richard Schiff in Vancouver saying mahalo.
Strip down, rise up.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Catch Gina Grad with Teresa Strasser on Easy Listening. And catch Bald Brian on The Film Vault, available wherever you get podcasts. Pick up something of Adam Carolla's. Go to adamcarolla.com.